This is session number 57, recorded on March 3rd, 2008, and this is Side A. So we talked generally in session 56 about this second chart, what's called known as the tiny note chart. And if you look at it, it says at the top, a chain letter of phase shifts. Synchronous Bob's tiny note equals the Grand Wazoo's decad dance. And a subtitle, Cyclotron of Homeopathic Cliche Probes, and then below that in brackets, causes, in quotes, causes merging with effects. So we know Homeopathic Cliche Probes was level 7, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, level 7 of the formula chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the term under ALP. So you have a cyclotron of Homeopathic Cliche Probes, there's more than one, and they're whizzing through, and this is a frozen shot of the whizzing through action. And causes merging with effects, causes in quotes, is the definition under HCE on the formula chart in the right-hand column. So you actually got a reference to the left-hand ALP section, cyclotron of Homeopathic Cliche Probes, and then underneath it a reference to HCE in the far right column from the formula chart, right? So you have a little ratio there. You got that?
Yeah.
So a chain letter of phase shifts. So since this is a cyclotron, which is the apparatus for studying subatomic particles, right?
Right.
We have subatomic particles named here for each phase. Can you see the subatomic particle for homeopathic radio satellite? You see the name for it?
Yeah, subatomic particles. I don't see the subatomic particles.
Hadron. Look right up, says homeopathic radio satellite.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
See that, Hadron?
Yeah.
And then to the right of that is Monad, and then God, and then 1814, 1900. They're all capitalized like Rai, Eloy, Tu, Lofty, and Bob, right?
Right.
Above them, they're capitalized. So naming these subatomic particles is important. And I'm saying it is, from that science's point of view, where you're at with the homeopathic radio satellite phase. Then you go to the next phase, and what's the homeopathic television satellite? What's the phase, the subatomic particle there?
Meson.
Right. And then the Thomson quadrant, or homeopathic computer satellite, is called?
Baryon.
Right. Then homeopathic satellite squared?
Diquark.
Right. Now, and then anthropomorphic physical demon nuclei. Okay?
Right.
Now, these
which I tried to look up, and it's hard to find a definition on a demon nuclei.
That's right. To show the transience of what physicists come up with and the transience of the nomenclature, these were names that were prominent in the late 80s. There was a book by John Brockman did a book, Surveying All the Sciences, and he ran through the physicist landscape. And the terms demon nuclei were dropped later. Maybe not so much the diquark, but definitely demon nuclei, which was a proposed term, and a certain number of physicists maybe accepted it. But it made it into Brockman's book, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I put in a term that has no staying power in retrospect. I mean, I did this chart 10 years later, so that I knew demon nuclei was not strong anymore as a term, but it fit the meaning of the Dobbs quadrant, and it also showed the transience of these of this whole situation, because they're quark tunes. Each quadrant is almost like a quark tune, and they're moving through the each other rapidly. But the if you actually look up these terms, Hadron, the way it's described, could fit the LaRue notions. Meson fits the McLuhan quadrant because Zappa, in one of his booklets for, or a booklet for Uncle Meat, that album came out in the late 60s, he plays off the Meson particle nomenclature. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So Zappa is in the McLuhan quadrant, and that's why I put Meson in there. Baryon, you can look it up. It kind of fits the Thompson Gaia theme. Not exactly, but you could fit it if you found the definition. Diquark is to show the Android meme phase, the Coker quadrant, where a quark is mirrored by another quark. And that is like the Android meme mirroring the humans it extends. But really, the Android meme, in its Android meme phase, is starting to go inside the human, so there's no difference. But we like to hoik up in the 80s and 90s the idea the Android meme was taking us over. So we set up a fake split. So that's the usefulness of diquark. And it's useful because if you look, say, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 names phases down within the Holy Path of Satellite Squared. You see what you see? You know, you start with movie, then Croker, Air, Panic, Lumines Trilogy, Astrobody, and what do you come to?
Well, joined at the hip.
Yeah, they're joined. They're not. The diquark is, if you think of two heads joined at the hip, then they're joined, yet they kind of look on the higher level or from the neck up, they look like they're separate, right? Or from the torso up. But they're not totally separate, okay?
Right.
So you have a contradiction in there. Diquark within the joined at the hip. It's almost like the Android meme fosters individual sense of autonomy from the media as the Android meme shrinks. So it thinks it's getting free of the media. But actually the electronic ground and the clone DSP still has you interconnected and merged with everybody. Okay?
That's what you call the xenochrony, the fact that you think you're getting away from it, but it keeps happening anyway.
Yeah. Like me, I try not to identify with the synchronicity, and yet it keeps getting stronger, the synchronicity, at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking to get... And so I have to say, well, this synchronicity is very strange. It's powerful. And that's xenochrony, meaning strange synchronicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Xeno means strange. So... Now, demon nuclei gets into this phase 77 to 92 because that's the phase when fundamentalism started to resurface and Reagan reigniting the Cold War when he came in. All right? He called the Soviet Union an evil empire. You remember that stuff?
Yeah.
So it became supposedly polarized. And a popular term by the end of the 80s is demonization. The demonization of gays or the demonization of this or that. You know, this was a common sociological or postmodern situation. I mean, I think even Baudrillard wrote a book called The Demon of Images.
Mm-hmm.
So that phase is best described by demon nuclei.
Right.
So that's why I put it in there. But the point is that these are pretty transient phases, pretty transient, melting away rapidly memes, but they keep cycling back.
You're talking about the whole chart or just the,
yeah. No, the whole
last
chart.
Quadrants here?
Well, the whole chart, the chart of quadrants and their interplay.
Right.
The interplay of holeopathy cliche probe. Each quadrant is a holeopathy cliche probe. And they keep cycling back. So you could actually impose a tetrad into the chart. You have when LaRouche is enhanced, or the holeopathic radio hadron is enhanced, obsolesces the Meson quadrant, McLuhan, retrieves the baryon, flips into diquark, and then you bring in the pentad level, which cancels out the sequence of tetradic four-level effects and goes right through and erases it. That would be the Dobbs quadrant. All right? So you got a 4-5 dynamic here. You've got the 4, which is the tetrad, and you could take any one of these quadrants and make a tetrad out of them. But you have to remember that the Android meme is the actual tetrad manager, and it's not even concerned with controlling or following that pattern. It is one pattern, what I call the pentad. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why in the Dobbs quadrant, which you notice has the word pentad over it, Booker has tetrad, the pentad is 1960 to 1990, which is the whole chart. Right?
60 to 90, yeah.
This chart is from 60 to 90, as taken out of the Dobbs formula, where homeopathic cliche probes are 60 to 77, anthropomorphic physical, 77 to 92. Those two are put together, so that's 60 to 92, if you want to talk about the dates on the formula chart. But I have on the tiny note chart, in the bottom right-hand corner, with the little Rumpelstiltskin statement on an angle, like a handle. It's like you're holding a handle, and the rest of the chart is a big ping-pong bat. And it's 1960 to 1990. That's the main ground of the whole chart. And it's really pentadic, the interaction of the chart here.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention, I printed this one off of I got the Bob chart that's listed on the five-bodied. I think it goes to EarMap's website.
Yeah.
And that one doesn't...
No, it doesn't go to EarMap. It goes to one that Matt created.
Yeah.
Big, quite visible. Big words. You know, it's two versions.
Yeah, but the nice clean one that has it's all typed out real nice.
Yeah, that's the five-body one. EarMap,
I just want to say that doesn't have Rumpelstiltskin at an angle because I don't think that technically they could do that.
Oh, so but EarMap does?
No, I don't think so.
EarMap has a wavy one. It kind of waves.
Yeah, it has a kind of a purple-colored bar that you can scroll up and down
right.
Along the columns.
Right.
And it's it's not a picture. It looks like he actually typed it out because the fonts look really clean.
Right, and that's
the Rumpelstiltskin's not at a slope or an angle because I don't think he could do that on the internet that way.
Okay, so that's not five body, that's EarMap's, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about five body.
No, I went to five body and it said click here for Bob's chart, so I clicked here for Bob's chart. I think it took me to EarMap's website. Let me take a look.
Yeah, I forgot about that, or I don't know about that.
Why don't you continue, and then I'll look this up while you're talking.
Well, no, I'll just quickly go there. I'm going to go into five-bodied. Anybody who doesn't know where we're going to fivebodied.com, B-O-D-I-E-D, five-bodied, one word.
Charts and image archives.
At the bottom, click on that, and then you look for tiny note chart. Click on that, then it has a web version and a print version. I flip on to the web version. It's not as big as it used to be. Maybe it's because I have to make my view larger. Okay, so click on that. Click on the web version. Still not as big as it used to be. That's odd. Maybe that's because of my new computer. Different setup. Yeah, they're not as big as they used to be. I got to figure that out. So where would you click on EarMap from that? I don't see any connection to EarMap.
Here it is. Down, you go down below where tiny note chart where you were just at. Go down, like, all the way almost to the bottom. And it says slick, tiny note chart.
Oh, okay. Now, that's the one you like.
Yeah, because it's easy to read.
Yeah, it's still small. The other one that I was trying, it was bigger. But for some reason, my computer is not showing it big anymore. Yeah, it's okay, so you got this. Yeah, he's got the arrow part in the middle column under 2, the interplay of the arrow. They're pulsating arrows. They're nice.
Yeah.
Now, I went through it with
But you see, if you scroll down, you'll notice that Rumpelstiltskin's not at an angle. I was just pointing out that
right.
He couldn't do that.
Yeah, now, it doesn't matter that it's not an angle. Well, sort of... but it's good enough to get the details. you see the pulsating middle column, right?
Yeah.
Now, if I go back to the five-bodied thing and look at that, the tiny node chart, does he have, do they have that on an angle? No, they don't have it on an angle either.
Yeah.
So only if you get the, it was posted in flip side. I don't know if they had the angle, but only if they have the piece of paper that I handed out over the years would you see the angle.
Right.
So for the record, it's on an angle. The Stiltkin section, which has corporatio state, which means fifth mentality. Then it says Bob Dobbs formula chart, holopathic backspins slash retrievals is figure in ratio to Bob's tiny note chart, holopathic cliche probes slash flippings is ground. And then Rumpelstiltskin. Rumpelstiltskin following from LaRouche's quadrant, Bob Dean, McLuhan's quadrant, Bob Marshall, Thompson's quadrant, Bob Neverett, Coker's quadrant, Bob Dobbs, and then my quadrant is called Rumpelstiltskin. So, okay, what were we saying? So that's on the, that's like the little handle, and this, you could say it's like a peacock fan that comes out of the little handle. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And you got all these subtle changes and patterns, kaleidoscopic patterns like a peacock's feathers.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this thing is, it pulsates. It's supposed to, if it wasn't on a piece of paper, it would pulsate like EarMap's chart shows.
Well, would the arrows be rotating or pulsating?
Yeah, well, they are pulsating, but I say the whole chart would be pulsating because it would show the ripples and changes that happen very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So that, I mean,
but
look at...
Is it all pulsating at the same rate, or as you go move down the chart where it's becoming more and more ethereal, is it pulsating faster?
Well, you could say they're going at different rates, but the point is I've frozen it with this visual image, and so we can analyze the contents. Yeah, but you would realize that each quadrant is representing a slower or faster era, right?
Right.
And the... I was going to say the...
things like Finnegan's Wake, you're trying to use visual space to describe something that can't be seen in visual space.
Right. So what... let's see. I was going to go into... so we understand that each quadrant is a meme and is an afterimage.
Each quadrant, there's five of them.
Yeah, each... That's right. People bring that up. Why do you have five quadrants? Remember I laid out the tetrad? Each LaRouche was enhanced, McLuhan's retrieve. They don't have to be, but if you want to start off with the linear presentation on the chart, McLuhan is obsolesce, Thompson is retrieve, and Coker is reversal or flip. Well, that's four. What do we got the fifth quadrant, Dobbs, for? The Dobbs represents the pentatic, which goes in and erases the divisions between the four.
Oh, cool.
Becomes one thing, one merged Android meme embedment.
So there's no tetradic metaphor going on anymore.
Right. And so the four...
The tetrad is considered, it's a metaphor of ratios between the... You've got the A is to B as C is to D thing going on in there?
Well, that's the definition of a metaphor. And McLuhan would say that the tetrads show a metaphorical process. So that enhance is to retrieve as obsolescence is to flip. Or obsolescence is to retrieve as enhance is to flip. They're flexible ratios between the four functions of the tetrad. And any artifact that has an A is to B is a C is D, in other words, is a metaphor, is a metaphor. So McLuhan said that the tetrads are pulsating metaphors. And his big discovery was that all technologies are pulsating metaphors,
yeah,
having ratio effects.
So this is probably as good a place as any to bring up this little rebuttal, but...
But Scott, hold on. Did I finish make it clear that the 4-5 issue, which was always a battle or an argument among esoteric mystics, whether there was a 5-part structure to being or a 4-part, and so I'm playing off the unresolved argument by having the Android meme externalize the five and permeate the four and wipe out the four. So it's, if it's going to be a tactile relationship, none of them are stable. So you bring in five quadrants to indicate that the quadrant, you can't, the defining of four quadrants cannot be precise because it's tactile, and you can't be precise under tactile conditions. You see?
Yeah, it's like squaring the circle or something. You can't do it.
Okay, so what were you going to say? You were going to be devil's advocate or something?
Well, just that I've never been convinced that the tetrad is actually all that concrete of a tool for doing anything, because you know, think of it, if I think in terms of science, well, scientists can come up with all kinds of beautiful theories, which they can show you all kinds of examples as to why their theory is true. But out of 100 theories, you know, maybe a couple of them actually get worked out to where science nails them down through observation and then puts them into practical application, you know, and then, you know, gets us to the moon and back or something like that. Whereas with the tetrad, every time I've ever heard anybody run tetrads on technology, I think to myself, well, that's a beautiful concept, but it has no practical value. No one has ever proven that it actually is, or there's a real correlation going on. You can, you know, for every tetrad that somebody can come up with about the car, I could come up probably with five more, and then we could all argue who's got the right one. I don't really understand why anybody puts how. You know, these are laws of media. Well, if these are laws of media, how can anyone convince me that these are actually concrete rules that actually are real and not just the plaything of the imagination of somebody who wants to postulate that they're real?
Okay, so McLuhan answered that. He got that complaint all the time. And he said, the tetrad is an open, flexible form, and the key element is pattern recognition and being aware of the process of pattern recognition, because the world was changing so rapidly. So he said you can have many tetrads on an artifact. No one tetrad dominates. He didn't mean it that way. It's to be, here's the final tetrad, the actual four functions and what happens. So that he was flexible with it, but he justified being flexible because he said science's laws related to, like what you said, getting to the moon and back. Now, why would we need to go to the moon when I can go to anywhere is by a television? The point being that hardware is a slower medium, and the effects on society are slower, and you could form a law like Newton did, and then Einstein comes up with an improvement, and you had sociological laws. McLuhan's point under electric second coming conditions, where there's perpetual change rapidly every day and people expect change, it would be insane to rely on one law. So the only thing you could rely on is a general pattern of how perception works, since your perception is always going to be pressured with new demands and new images and sounds and input. Then you have to have a very broad pattern formation or metaphor of ratios that the content of which is not precise. So for a software rapidly changing time, even getting to a point of no change so fast, his laws, the laws of science change. They cannot be eternal. That was the goal of visual spaceman. But when you get into tactile human conditions, the laws are just temporary handles. As he once said, we got to give concepts to people so people can get a grip on reality. But McLuhan always said he didn't stand by concepts, he stood by percepts. So the tetrad is a perceptual formula, a way of temporarily creating a sense of order around you if you need it. Most people don't look for order anymore. They just zombie-like respond to whatever's happening. If you took them aside, they might admit, yeah, it's a little chaotic and I don't have any formula, but I'm trying to survive. So I get in line. It's not even line, I guess you'd say. That's too linear. I get in mood. I become with it, whatever the fashion is.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is a non sequitur.
So you follow that? You follow that the tetrad is not in the old kind of science. Remember, it's new science.
Right.
It's a better science because it's not trying to be eternal.
Well, listen to this and tell me if it applies. I'm not sure that it does. This may be a non sequitur, but it just was kind of interesting today. I stumbled across a YouTube of a television commercial that David Lynch made, and it was for a software company that produces, you know, online gaming. And in the commercial, this guy, and, you know, this is not animated. This is, you see this guy driving his automobile down the road, just like you would in any movie, you know, being filmed with a camera. A guy's driving his car down the road. And it's a windy road. It's a forested area. And up ahead, about half a mile, he doesn't see it. There's a deer standing in the middle of the road. And so you see the camera flashing from the deer just peacefully standing in the middle of the road to this guy unwittingly driving his car in the direction, you know, where this deer's just right around the corner. And then, you know, flashing back and forth, deer, car, then the car comes around the corner. You see the car approaching the deer at high speed. The car smashes into the deer, and you see the front end of the hood and fender crumple in, making a formation around the deer, who's just peacefully standing there looking around like nothing's happening. The car flips over, and the deer just kind of, then, you know, you see steam coming out from under the hood, and the guy's regaining consciousness from behind the wheel, and the deer pops his head up and looks over the hood and then walks away like nothing happened. And then it says, the laws and rules you're used to do not apply here.
So the norm of people expecting change and even being cynical about anybody's laws having any long-standing staying power is right there in the popular culture now. That's a symbol of the focus group and ad agencies figuring out that that's the way a lot of people think.
Well, I mean, that's how it works in the gaming world. You can create any laws of gravity that, or laws of physics that you want. You can actually simulate laws of physics, and then you can mutate them any way you want to.
Well, as McLuhan would say, games are like art forms. They reflect the pressures in society. So games actually give people, it's like voluntary speech. It allows them to manufacture and play and re-edit a reality and create ratios of pressures and tensions in competition that is a miniature version of what's going on among the memes on my chart.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So, yeah, the games, the...
But I don't know that there's an actual correlation between that idea that the laws and rules don't apply in cyberspace. I don't think that necessarily corresponds to what you were saying about the laws and rules of the tetrad not being the same as the laws and rules of the physical universe.
No, of not of the physical universe, of old methods, literate methods of science.
Mm.
The Newton Gutenberg science, even up into the Einstein.
Right.
It's after that. I mean, science is done by computer now.
But do you consider the laws of media to be true laws that actually apply maybe to the rules of perception or something?
I say they're the best perceptual tool in a culture that doesn't have truth as a literate phenomenon anymore.
Mm.
Truth as defined in the literate sense of there's the outer world, and I must match it with the truth inside myself, or myself must match the truth of the outside. The relating of the outer and the inner doesn't apply anymore. See, the literate view of truth was that there was a reality out there which was solid, eternal, or a fact, and you had to adjust to that. Nowadays, you don't have to adjust to the outer world, or a large part of the outer world makes you think that you can edit and change the rules and do what you want to do, like the game life does.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bias of the Android meme. It makes you feel you're in charge. It makes you feel that there's no rules being imposed on you, and you can make up your own patterns.
Right, which you can do now in Second Life, that online virtual world, that you can create a little avatar, move into it, and then you can assemble yourself and the rules of the game according to how you want to play.
Yeah.
So you can do that there. You can't really do that in the physical universe. You can do it to some degree.
Well, there's a lot of people who think that you can overcome aging. Not that they're proving it yet, but people are starting to feel that their own, quote, physical or chemical body is programmable, and you're not subject to the strains and aging process that people had for centuries.
Yeah.
There's a whole movement now among doctors and maybe a lot of alternative or fringe people. They have these anti-aging conferences. Thousands of people go to them, and they take all these little potions and different techniques of super vitamins or super supplements, whatever it is they offer, and slow down the aging. So even the idea that there are physical laws for yourself is vulnerable now, and people are feeling that they can program the chemical body just like they can program their TV body. So that, this is what I was going to mention earlier, the handle of the Rumpelstiltskin part of the Dobbs quadrant is like a channel changer, and you're changing from the LaRouche quadrant to the McLuhan quadrant to the Croker quadrant to the Dobbs quadrant to the Thompson quadrant, right? Back and forth, rapidly. And so I'm including maybe even the way a measurement apparatus in the particle cyclotron, it can monitor really rapid movements and give the fine-tuned unit distinctions, okay?
That's what do you mean by really rapid? Are you talking about quantum fluctuations?
Well, the speed in the cyclotron, when the particles are shooting around and the speeds are in, the particles are in these amazing speeds, right?
Right. Well, flight speed, as particles move at, or close to.
Okay. I want to include those speeds in my chart.
Hmm.
And the shifts, the phase shifts between these leaden phases, when they actually happen, 47 to 57, 57 to 67, 67 to 72, 72 to 77, 77 to 90, right? Those phases were experienced by humans at a certain level. But where we're at now, and it was increasing all through the 60 to 90 period, it's happening a lot faster than the dates reference. So McLuhan would say the period from 57 to 67 was actually 20,000 years compared to centuries ago. So the
The chip in the computer on your desktop right now can process instructions at billions per second.
Yeah. So I want to include that on the chart. So that's why I put in the speeds implied by the word cyclotron and the subatomic particles. In other words, if people ask me if I'm a McLuhanite or a LaRoucheite or am I into this or that meme, I'd say yeah for about 2 seconds.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that's how I, and usually I'm ignoring the mind going through these patterns. Because even to hold on to a thought and communicate it doesn't keep up with the deeper levels of change going on. So when we get to the level of, it's so fast, you can almost call it no change, what McLuhan called eternity, as opposed to literate slow change called history. Now we're into instant, almost eternal eternity levels. Then that's another reason why the pentadic swallows the four-part tetrad phase. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So the quadrants are swallowed, and it depends on what level of pattern recognition skills you have, whether you want to focus on the decadal part, the decad. You know, there's the LaRouche, the 50s, there's McLuhan, the 60s, Thompson, the 70s, Croker, the 80s, Dobbs, the 90s, okay? And you can work out the details of those decades and the references to them, like McCarthyism in the LaRouche quadrant, JFK assassination in the McLuhan quadrant, and work on that stuff, like you're on the Discovery Channel, and you're looking at a half-hour documentary on McCarthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a two-hour special, some dramatization or a docudrama. you can go into any time that's retrieved today in the entertainment world and experience it at a certain level. You might, if they bring up Joseph McCarthy on the anniversary, 50th anniversary of his bad performance on television in around 1954, the news will give you 20 seconds on it, right? Mm-hmm. Here's McCarthy. 50 years ago today, he blew it on TV and it was the end of the McCarthy era. You know what I mean?
Right. They've compressed almost an era into a moment.
Yeah, a moment. And so we've got a lot of moments going on and a lot of channels featuring an expansion. It's almost like taking a drug and slowing down time. And you can study the McCarthy era in a four-part, you know, each show 2 hours long for four nights, meaning a total of 8 hours going into the period 47 to 54, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Jack Nicholson playing Harry Truman or something, you know. You can take any of these moments and expand it to a long thing or to a blip. So I want to include that factors on the chart. Mm-hmm. All the time showing you that when you make it an eye-based, isolated visual map, that is an unreality compared to what it's describing right there. So I'm playing with the way the eye will look at the dates and imagine time spans and decades, but I'm frustrating the eye by putting these other time speeds in there. You see what I'm saying?
No.
So actually, the most people probably can't read the chart because there's no obvious framework and a sequence happening within the framework. There's no sequence of phase shifts. But I mean, well, what's Hadron got to do with 47 to 57? So I'm putting conflicting cycles, conflicting lengths of time, all on the same page, and in the end it would look like, if you actually broke it down and erased the defined visual parameters as I lay it out, it would turn into a page of Finnegan's Wake. Chaotic miasma, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like collapsing the categories. So we're actually celebrating the eye by taking this miasma and freezing it into a moment. And the moment spans 30 years, but then refers to the formula chart, which goes over 250 years. Is that 250 years? 250, 270 years. And then there's the implications of what came before that, going back thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at a hallucinating kaleidoscope here, but it's frozen for the eye, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the hints of what's going on here, so I thought of this to emphasize. So let's look under the lofty column, which becomes the God column, and you'll see just at the bottom of each quadrant, you have the name of studies. Right above Ezra Pound, cultural studies. Then you have cultural sociology in the McLuhan quadrant. Then you have semiology right above the name T.S. Eliot in the Thompson quadrant. Then you have dialectical materialism, which reflects off diquark, a dialectic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Dialectical materialism. And then you have all four plus stages of apprehension. But the cultural studies looks into areas of culture that might take a stretch of time to study. Sociology looks at stretches of time. Semiology deals with a little later period where the changes are happening faster and people are just noticing brands or signs, okay, sign systems. So that came in with the computer speeds of the 70s. Then you move into dialectical materialism, which is basically postmodern culture war stuff of the 80s and 90s, where it was the fundamentalists against the universities. It was a very polarized culture. The popular term was culture wars between the pro-abortion and the anti-abortion. So it retrieves dialectical materialism, which was a term for Marxism, right? Way back.
Mm-hmm.
But all four plus, that means all four quadrants plus the pentadic, are stages of apprehension all happening at once. They all collapse in the pentad phase. You don't have time for dwelling on Patsy Cline or the sociological effects of Bob Dylan or Lou Reed or Johnny Rotten, because actually those quadrants are happening on different channels, so to speak, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Go to one channel and see a documentary on Johnny Rotten. Go to another and see one on Ezra Pound.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the history of the formation of cultural studies or of cultural sociology. And all those topics, they slow down over an hour to on 2 hour Discovery Channel special or HBO special, but they're in an environment where that's almost an illusion compared to the rapidity of what events are transpiring 24/7 all around the 2 hours you watch that show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's many time cycles going on, or time speeds.
So every moment enfolds all previous moments.
And future moments. So that this picture, this chart, is a snapshot of all time. It's a snapshot of our version of the Akashic Records.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at each term to get a sense of the time span that you can work at. So when you look at under God, it says Eros, and in brackets, periodic. That means the periodic cycle. Then you get into McLuhan, it says under sex, chaos, chaotic. You could say that's toward the strange attractor kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the static, Gaia. That's a static attractor. And
anyway,
then in the Croker, under consciousness, Orpheus, tetradic. That's a different kind of attractor, more complex than this periodic, static, or chaotic attractor, or strange attractor. It's more organized. It's tetradic.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the pentadic, and that's Prometheus. That's you being able to organize matter or edit your media diet the way you want, and you are not subject to any phases before or after you. So it's pentadic.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have 1947 to 57, the God quadrant.
Does that imply immortality? Prometheus, pentadic?
Yes, because remember, we're looking at this from the hexadic level, where we've broken through to cold fusion and immortality possibilities through genetic engineering or other devices. And you can see that the actual arrival in that state was prefigured by the pentadic Prometheus immortality of people creating their own YouTube things and being their own broadcasters. In other words, you can create an image or a little video, and it's forever there, as long as we have this digital environment, it's forever preserved. You've created an immortality of yourself. Whereas authors, they wrote books, the books would be burnt or they would erode or be thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
Only universities and libraries preserve the books. And that was for certain select, I guess, so-called popular authors. Now everybody's preserved.
Well, it'd be interesting to me to discover what is the shelf life of information on the internet. How long is it going to be there before it's erased and replaced with something else?
Right. The thing is that, like, Zappa's albums, they were vinyl, and then they were cassette tapes, and then they were CDs, and now they're DVDs, I guess. The thing is that any artist gets preserved, as a major artist gets preserved as you move into a new form. They're probably, when we get to the next medium, they'll be able to preserve everybody, whether they're famous or not, and it'll be presented in a new form.
Well, that's what the Akashic Records presumably do.
Yeah. So we're recreating the Akashic Records. So the immortality of one's media creation, second nature creation, the Prometheus pentadic fact we're in now, that is not immortality for your physical body, your first nature body, but it is for your chipper TV body. But we're going to flip into immortality for your physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what comes after the transition into the hexadic. So you see what I mean? That software immortality is prefiguring physical first nature immortality, or something pretty amazing, like being able to live 300 years or something, you know.
Right.
So,
well, you know, we could all be avatars in somebody else's God game, in which the Akashic Art, what we consider to be the Akashic Records, the memory of all physical events impressed on the etheric plane, that could be a computer matrix within somebody else's God brain, and we're just their little avatars playing it out in this world.
Well, I bet you that reality will be realized, but those, as we move into the mystery body, so you're articulating possibilities that we're going to find out we're made up of what we didn't know we were made up. You just described one scenario. We find out we're little avatars in some other mind. That probably will happen, that realization. But it won't necessarily be the end. There'll be another realization beyond that.
Yeah.
So I was just starting to say a few minutes ago,
there's always a possibility for freedom of breaking through what you presently conditioned by.
Right, and the possibility you won't be able to handle it, and you'll have a lot of mental pain, what they call insanity. So you'll find people putting on memes to protect themselves, and that's what this chart is showing, what people will fit into, which area, which meme. But in the LaRouche quadrant, under God, the slogan is God is dead. And that's a journalistic statement made around 1960, referring to the actual changes from 47 to 57. Then you get into the sex quadrant, the McLuhan quadrant, focused around 1965.
Yeah, why does that meme get recycled? God is dead, is that a recycling of Nietzsche, who said that in the late 18th century?
Yeah, 19th century. Yeah, that's what I assume maybe that's what was being said in 1960, that cultural literate reference to Nietzsche. But the next quadrant, you have a 10-year span summed up by the statement, if it feels good, do it. And that resonates with the idea of sex.
And the electric environment.
Yeah.
Sex is kind of electric, or it's energetic, or...
Well, the sexual revolution in American culture was kinetically biased Americans thinking that the tactile interplay effect of television was kinetic contact. So everybody started hugging each other and screwing. Miming a kinetic version of tactility.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas other cultures had other versions of tactility. They didn't have a sexual revolution. They had other strange phenomena, like the children's revolution in China, or children's crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Mao's revolution. There was all this culturally biased, naturally design each culture along certain preferences, interpreting the global theater's tactility,
mm-hmm.
translating it, turning it into their metaphor.
Yeah, if you were a culture that was already kind of had a history of being more tactile than visual, then when you became, when electric tactility invaded your culture, it had a different effect on you than it did if electric tactility invaded a visual culture.
That's right. So electric tactility threatened the Japanese tactile culture, so they jumped into the West, and they became very good at copying Western products and making new kinds of cars which had tactile conditions, which resonated with the new tactile needs in the American culture. And you had the flood of Asian students in the 80s and 90s, maybe even before. That is a major figure in college life, is the flood of Asian students who could do very well in left hemisphere Western models of knowledge that the American students weren't interested anymore or were weak on.
Yeah.
So what you have is the East threatened by the global tactility. It puts on the West. The West, represented by the beatniks and the hippies and the way the corporations decentralized, the change in their hierarchical models, this is in the 60s, changes again in the 80s, the West put on the Eastern dynamic, right? They put on the Eastern tactility as an attempt to counter the erosion of the West. just as the Japanese are being eroded by electric tactility, they put on the West, we, the West, put on the East. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a broad pattern in the 60s. It speeds up and becomes different later. So when you're looking at the chart and you want to get a sense of shifts, you have a slogan, like God is dead, represent the effect of radio. If it feels good, do it, the effect of television. And the 60s, radio being the 50s. The 70s is computer.
The whole world is watching. Isn't that a satellite effect?
Yeah, but what's it say? Homeopathic computer / satellite.
Oh, okay.
They're all satellited in the global theater. Because it's not the original computer, it's a homeopathic, a shrunk computer. It's the beginning of the digital computer world.
Right.
The internet starts getting built in September of 69.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the MIT and the Stanford, or maybe it was UCLA, they set up two computers. They hooked up two computers and sent a message to from one to the other. That happened the first week of September 69.
Mm-hmm.
So the so then that unfolds rapidly in the 70s, and in the 80s is the homeopathic satellite. Now it's the satellite itself which was resonating with a replay of the homeopathic computer, homeopathic TV, and homeopathic radio. Now itself is flipping into nothing. So the homeopathic satellite squared, right?
So in a way, this chart is the internet. The networked computers the embryonic stages of the internet through to its completion, and the internet subsuming all previous technologies.
Right. This is an image on a simpler level of the web, of
so
the internet.
If the web, if the internet, if the TV is the completion of the central nervous system, what is the web or the internet a completion of?
It's the media, since all media up to the satellite or up to the television were extension of our human first nature faculties, and then the satellite topped it off by extending first nature itself, the whole planet, right? Not just the human body. After that is the technologies that have been extended starting to have incest with itself, and it's extending itself, not us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so
well, we're being extended along with it. We're being carried along for the ride.
No, not, we are starting to be autonomous from the extension process. And the final seduction is that the Android meme, which is extending technology within itself, is disappearing itself so that it doesn't even seem to be doing that anymore.
Mm.
It gives us autonomy. That's the point, is that we feel that it's extending on our behalf and we're not subject to it anymore. Okay?
Mm.
So let's end this side with that. We'll go into it in the next side.
Okay. Signing off for the break.